Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Tonight's share is entitled Drinking on Purim. What is the source? Is it a mitzvah? And how is it done? Those who have gone through the Maamar Matamis already saw that the Makor, the source for drinking on Purim, is a Gemara in Masechet Megillah that says explicitly, Chayav Adam Libsumei before you Adlo Yada ben Ar Haman Lebaruch Mordechai, a person is obligated Libsumei. Libsumei is not a common word, but it is taken to mean, Rashi says, Lehishtakir B'yayin, to become drunk, Adlo Yada, until he doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman Lebaruch Mordechai, between Ar Haman, cursed is Haman, and Baruch Mordechai, blessed is Mordechai. So, the first thing we need to do is to understand what does it mean libsume bepuria, to become drunk on Purim, and what does it mean, it's a funny gauge, until he doesn't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, between cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. That's a funny way of giving us a gauge for how drunk to get. In other places in Shas and in other halachos, there are different gradations for drinking. For example, there's a discussion when it comes to davening, if a person has had a revius of wine, like which is the amount that we need for Kiddush, a person has had a revius of wine, if he's had more than a revius or less than a revius. That's one of the ways of categorizing the amount a person has to drink. There's a question of Omid Bifnei HaMelech, can he stand before the king? Or Eino Omid Bifnei HaMelech, or he cannot stand before the king. That's another way of categorizing how drunk a person is. And then we have Shichrusoi Shalot. Is he as drunk as Lot in the story with Lot and his daughters? Is he that drunk that he has no idea what's going on? Or is he not Kishichrusoi Shalot? He's not as drunk as Lot was in that story. Those are the typical ways that we will categorize the levels of being drunk. They couldn't do blood alcohol in those days. So the way Chazal do it is with these different levels. Was it a revius? Can he stand before a king? Is he as drunk as Lot? This way of categorizing it, that he has had enough to drink that he can't tell the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, we don't find it anywhere else except here in the Purim halacha. So it's a funny way for Chazal to tell us what seems to be an amount. You should drink lipsume until you don't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. It's a funny way of saying it. So that also needs to be understood. There are those who want to suggest the word lipsume doesn't mean to become drunk, rather it means to be happy, which it can mean. But it's hard to say that because Rashi does say lehishtaker b'yayin, to become drunk. Rashi doesn't say lishtos yayin, to drink wine. Rashi actually says lehishtaker. Lehishtaker means to become drunk. Now there are different levels of being drunk, as we just said. But it's not just having a few sips of wine. Clearly the intention here is to drink a significant amount. Now, at the same time, as anybody who has gone further in the Maamar Matamis, in the source material saw, everybody, all of the Mefarshim, all the commentaries, are troubled by how there could be a mitzvah that would require a person or encourage a person to become drunk. Because we know when a person is drunk, that they are then in a state of being where they can't perform mitzvahs properly, they certainly can't learn Torah properly, they can't daven, they can barely do anything that is constructive. So why would there be, if we take it at face value, a person should become drunk on Purim until they don't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai? They can't tell the difference between the fact that Haman should be cursed and Mordechai should be blessed. They're mixing up the characters of the Purim story. It's difficult to say, it's difficult to understand why Chazal would have required such a state of being. And because of this, many of the Mefarshim take the words of the Gemara and try to paint them in a way that will make it less of a drunken state. Now, amongst these mafarsh, amongst these commentaries, you can find those that ring true, and then there are those that I would call are apologetic, meaning that they really try to twist the words of the Gemara to the point where it doesn't really seem that what the Gemara means to say. And that also is a funny thing. Usually we don't find mefarshim that take a Gemara and deliberately twist its meaning so that it doesn't mean what it seems to mean. But over here, it's almost as if, well, it can't mean what it seems to mean, so we've got to twist it in a way that it'll come out to something else. And that doesn't ring true to most people when they read it. So if a person doesn't like the idea of getting drunk on Purim, so they hang their hat on these mefarshim and these commentaries in order to say the Gemara doesn't really mean it. But it's hard to say that. So what I'd like to do is give some of the explanations that are said about this Gemara. Some of them you've seen already. And then also explain where the mefarshim, where the commentaries are coming from, to why you would twist it, why you wouldn't twist it, exactly how to approach the entire concept of getting drunk. Before getting into the details, though, of that, let's just first step back and examine what it means in our minds to become drunk. And I want to make an observation here that should be noted before really delving into the sugya. And that is that the world at large has a picture of what it means to become drunk. And it's not associated with anything positive. It's certainly not associated with anything spiritual. That's for sure. Most everyone, when you talk about drunkenness, will conjure up either a college setting or a sports setting or something like that, where the people who are becoming drunk are certainly not acting in a way that we would encourage anybody to act. Certainly not people who are supposed to be Torah observant Jews. However, if anybody has been to a Purim Seudo or a yeshiva setting where the people are drinking on Purim and it is being done properly, if that's the case, then those who are not used to it at all, those who have never been exposed to such a thing, often comment about how surprising it is to see people in a drunken state who are not using profanity, who are not acting immorally, who are not degrading each other or fighting with each other, and are instead either saying Divrei Torah or are trying to be friendly with other people or dancing or singing. It's a very different type of drunkenness than what the world is used to. So there is no question that if we're going to take the Gemara literally and say that it means to actually become drunk, we're not talking about, as all the Mefarshim say, we're not talking about the type of drunkenness that leads to the immoral behavior and the profanities and the fighting, etc. We are talking about a drunken state which would be channeled in a proper way, which would mean to focus on the Nes of Purim, the miracle of Purim, to be singing, dancing to Hashem, to be saying words of Torah, to be generally in a friendly way with other people. Now, the Gemara, as you saw, after introducing Chayav Adam of Sumi B'Puri, a person is obligated, Chayav, obligated to become drunk on Purim, follows it up with a story, a very strange story, between Rabbah and Rav Zera that they got together for the Purim Seuda to end all Purim Seudas. Where they got together, they became drunk, and if you read the story the way it seems to read, Rabbah actually shechted, he slaughtered Rav Zera. It sounds like he took a knife and actually killed Rav Zera during the Seuda. The next day, when Rabbah saw what happened, he davened and brought Rav Zera back to life. That's beautiful. The next year, Rabbah then asked Rav Zera, want to get together for the Purim Seuda? And Rav Zera respectfully declined. The fact that that story is brought on the heels of Rava's statement of Chayav Adam Libsume Bapuria, that a person is obligated to become drunk on Purim, seems that the Gemara is trying to tell us that it doesn't always work out. that yes, there may be some sort of obligation or conceptually it's a good thing to become drunk on Purim, but even Rabba and Rav Zeira, who were Amoraim, they were the sages of the Gemara, even they ended up in a bad way because of it. The Rabba actually killed Rav Zeira. It is because of this that the Taz, which was one of the Maror Makomos, one of the source materials that we had, the Taz says in Shulchan Aruch, because of this, that we see that the Gemara does not rule like Rava. So when Rava says, Chayev Adam Lebsume Bapurya, that a person is obligated to get drunk on Purim, the Gemara follows it up with the story of Rava and Rav Zeira to show us that the halakha is not according to Rava. That although Rava said it, we don't agree with him. And at the end of the day, it is not correct that a person should become drunk on Purim, because look what happened. In other words, it may be a nice idea if we could do it properly, but even Rava and Rav Zeira didn't do it properly, and therefore we do not paskin this way, we don't rule this way, and a person should not become drunk on Purim. That's what the way the Taz understands it. At least a person shouldn't get that drunk that he would kill somebody else. The problem, though, is that the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, says explicitly, he just quotes the Gemara, Chayev Adam Lemsume Bapuria, Ad Lo Yada, Bin Arur Hama Lebaruch Mordechai, a person is obligated to become drunk on Purim, so they do not know the difference between cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. So the fact that the Mechaber just says it straight, doesn't explain it, that would seem to indicate that he does not agree with the Taz, and feels that the Gemara is ruling like Rava. After all, the Gemara does not bring anybody that explicitly disagrees with Rava, it just brings the story. But it doesn't tell us that someone disagrees with Rava. Amar so-and-so, Rava's wrong, I say such and such. You don't have that in this Gemara. And the Mechaber thinks the Paskin straight, that a person is obligated to do it. Those of you who got to the Marsha explains that the story of Rabba and Rav Zeira cannot be taken literally, that Rabba killed Shachteh, he slaughtered Rav Zeira. And he says that would be a tamua, that would be bewildering to say that he actually killed him. The Marsha is not the only one who says that it can't be. And the Marsha therefore says that the intent over here is that Rabba made Rav Zeira drink a lot because of what Rabba said, that you have to become so drunk on Purim that you can't tell the difference. So he forced Rav Zeira to drink. They're drinking and drinking and drinking. Rabba was able to tolerate the alcohol better than Rav Zeira could, and Rav Zeira became sick. He became physically sick because of the drinking. And as a result, Rabba had to daven that Rav Zeira should become better. Rav Zeira was sick. He wasn't dead. He was sick, and Rabba had to pray for Rav Zeira to recuperate. That's what the Gemara actually means according to the Marsha. It still means that the drinking went awry, but it's not that someone committed some sort of aggressive act against someone else. There was no act of aggression here that Rabba killed Rav Zeira, according to the Marsha. It's that there was drinking going on, and the spirit of the drinking, Rav Zeira drank too much and got sick. And then Rabba davened that he should get better. It could be that's how the Shulchan Aruch would explain it, which is why he does not agree with the Taz, that the story is, he would say the story does not disagree, does not undermine what Rava said. It's still important to drink on Purim. The Rambam, as you saw in your handout, the Rambam does not quote the Gemara. The Rambam, when he wants to paskin a Gemara, will generally quote the Gemara verbatim. Here the Rambam does not quote the Gemara verbatim. Instead, the Rambam says, I'll read it, Kesar Kova Suda Zu, what is the obligation of this Suda, this meal that you have to eat on Purim? Sheyochal Basar, you should eat meat, Yisakin Suda Nar, and you should set up a nice meal, Kefi Ashatim Sayado, based on what you can afford. The Shosayayin, you should drink wine. Everybody agrees that one should drink wine at the Purim Suda. Ad Shigishtake, till he becomes drunk, says the Rambam. V'yiradim, and he will then doze off. V'shichruso, in his drunkenness. So the Rambam doesn't say anything about not knowing the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Rather, the Rambam just says, you should drink enough that you become drowsy and fall asleep out of the drunkenness. That's what the Rambam says. Perhaps the Rambam would say that it would be just as good to listen to a shir at the Seuda and fall asleep. In the very small print on that page of the Rambam, in the Hagos Maimonides, which is too small for me to read as well, but it is quoted later on, the Hagos Maimonides brings from the Rav Yah that although the Gemara says chayav, it doesn't mean one is obligated, rather it means it is a good thing to do. Now that's not so far-fetched. There are many things in Shas that the language of the Gemara will be chayav, obligated, or usur, prohibited, and in fact what the Gemara actually means is, instead of chayav, obligated, the Gemara actually means it's a good idea, and usur, when it says prohibited, it doesn't necessarily mean it's actually prohibited, as if one is violating one of the Tayag mitzvahs, one of the 613 mitzvahs, it actually means it's a very discouraged practice. If that happens, it's not so uncommon for the Gemara to use words that really overstate it a little bit. And so the Rav Yah says, when it says chayiv in the Gemara, it doesn't really mean one is obligated, it just means one is encouraged strongly to do it. But if you don't do it, you're not violating something, you're not ignoring one of the mitzvahs of Purim. Based on this Rambam, in Shulchan Aruch, after the Mechaber paskins that one is obligated to drink, until they don't know the difference in Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, the Ramah says, Yesh Amim, some say that you're not obligated to get so drunk, but rather just to drink, Yoser Milimudo, drink more than you would normally drink, and then fall asleep. And the Ramah says, and when one is asleep, one doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, between cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. So the Ramah says that the Rambam, who says one should drink and fall asleep, the Rambam is actually saying what he understands the Gemara to be saying. That when the Gemara says one is obligated to become so drunk that they don't know the difference, it doesn't mean that the person is so drunk that they mix up the characters of the Purim story and they can't think straight. It means a person drinks more than they normally drink, becomes drowsy, falls asleep. While they're asleep, a person doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and one is fulfilled what the Gemara says. That's how the Rama explains it, which means that the Rama is giving an alternative to the Gemara. But the Rama ends off very interestingly. The Rama ends off. He says it's whether a person drinks a lot or drinks a little, as long as your kavanah, as long as your intent is l'shamayim, is for the sake of heaven. Which means the Ramah is not saying that the only correct pshat in the Gemara is that you should drink and fall asleep. He's saying there are a couple of different possibilities. You can fulfill what Rava is saying in the Gemara a couple of different ways. You can either drink to the extent that you lose your ability to discern between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, or you can drink less than that, become drowsy, fall asleep, and when you're asleep you don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. It seems that the Rama is willing to say that the Gemara is deliberately vague in the way it presents itself. When the Gemara says, until you don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, rather than the Gemara saying, drink a revius, or drink until you can't stand in front of a king, or drink until you're like Lot. The Gemara doesn't say those things. It seems the Rama is understanding the reason why the Gemara doesn't say those things is the Gemara wants to leave it vague enough that it can be fulfilled in different ways. And not everyone has to do it the same way. One person can decide, I'm going to do it by getting drunk enough that I lose the perception of what's the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and another person could say, I'm going to drink less than that, I'll become drowsy, fall asleep, and then I won't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Any questions at this point?
How would someone know what the word Yitzume means in this context? Do you have any other usage in Baruch
Mordechai? There are many of the Mefarshim try to dissect this word Yitzume, but Rashi tells us straight. He tells us to become drunk with wine. So you don't need to challenge Rashi.
You're saying that the video is a good idea perhaps for you, and you can actually do something else.
Okay, yes. So we find that different people did it different ways. And in fact, if you'll turn to the last page of your handout, which has the Mishnah Berurah in it, if you haven't seen it, I'd like to call your attention to the Shari Tshuva. It's underlined. The Shari Tshuva says, "Ayin b'sidur amudei shamayim." I'm having trouble reading it. Shekasav she'aviv hagon zal. He says, "Look in the sidur amudei shamayim that his father the gon, what he would do is hayanoheg bimei bahuso lekayim hamemra kipshuto. When he was younger, he would fulfill the words of Rava." Exactly the way they say it. In other words, he would drink until he became disoriented enough that he couldn't tell the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai. And then, when he got older and weaker, then he fulfilled it differently. So that again, we see this idea that there are different ways of doing it. And it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. It doesn't even have to be the same for each person from year to year. That as a person changes, either because of their age or because of their circumstances or whatever it is, a person can do the drinking thing on Purim differently. It would seem that everybody agrees one should drink at least more than they normally do, but it doesn't have to be to the point where a person is so drunk. It just depends on everybody's different and how to do this. He does say that a person should not drink so much if they're weak, the Shari Tshuva does. And then he says, a raya l'davar, proof to this, that a person does not need to drink until, if they're weak and they're going to get sick. They don't need to drink so much. The raya is from the Riva. Resh Yud Beis Aleph. That's what he says, the proof is from the Riva. And the Shari Tshuva explains, Riva means, it's an acronym for Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Because Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai had trouble drinking wine. It got him sick. It didn't get him sick as in sick to the stomach, got him, he had a terrible, terrible headache, maybe a migraine it sounds like. He had a terrible pain in his head if he would drink wine. The Gemara Yerushalmi in Masech HaShabbos says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah was one of those people that he would force himself to drink the 4 cups of wine on Pesach, and he would have to hold his head in pain from Pesach until the Chag, until the holiday. The Chag either means Shavuos or Sukkot. But for many months, after drinking wine on Pesach, he would be in pain. But he forced himself to do it anyway because everybody has to drink 4 cups of wine on Pesach. So the Shari Tshuva says, but you see that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai did not force himself to drink on Purim. He forced himself to drink on Pesach, but not on Purim. So you see that the obligation of drinking the 4 cups on Pesach is much more important than the obligation to drink on Purim. And if a person will become physically sick from drinking, one does not have to drink on Purim, but one has to find a way to drink on Pesach. Now, before anybody takes this too far, if a person really does get sick for drinking on Pesach, one should consult their Rav, because there are alternatives even on Pesach. But the point is that the threshold for being able to use an alternative on Pesach, that threshold is higher than the threshold for not drinking on Purim. A person has the right to say, wine gets me sick, I don't want to get sick, therefore I'm not going to drink on Purim. That's acceptable. With Pesach, it's a little more tricky, and one has to be able to work out what are they going to do if they don't drink wine. They've got to drink something. How are they going to work that out? There was one year where I had gotten an illness in the wintertime. And one of the things after I recuperated, the doctor told me I had to stay away from alcohol for a certain amount of months. So that certain amount of months took us past Purim and up to Pesach. So I said to the doctor, it was a firm doctor in Baltimore, so I said to the doctor, I can't drink on Purim? He says, grape juice. So I said to him, and you're telling me that I have to drink wine on Pesach? He said, absolutely. I said, can we reverse it? He said, no, I'm sorry. So, not drinking on Purim, if you have a good reason, it's fine. With Pesach, it's more important. And that's what he's bringing from Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. in what does it mean not to know the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai, between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai? So the simple meaning, as we said, is that either they are a person is drunk enough that they become disoriented about the Purim story. The other way is to be asleep, and then one isn't thinking at all, doesn't know the difference between anything, let alone Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. There are creative ways of dealing with this as well. You may have seen the Marsha's way of explaining it. The Magen Avraham has a very novel idea where he says that the gematria of Aruch Haman and the gematria of Baruch Mordechai are the same. We tried it in our group just a few minutes ago. It's 502 if you add them up. So if a person becomes drunk enough that they can no longer calculate in their heads this gematria, that Aruch Haman is 502 and Baruch Mordechai is 502 and they equal out, that's drunk enough. They've fulfilled their obligation. It would seem then that someone like an actuary needs to drink more, because it'll take longer before they can't figure it out than someone who's weak with numbers. But that's the Magen Avraham's way of explaining it. Others say more involved explanations. The Nesivus in his, Rabbi Yaakov Melissa, in his Hakdama, in his introduction to Megillas Esther, in his Pirush Megillas Tarma, Megillas Esther, it's printed in the Mikros Gedolos. Rav Kolevsky, Zichron of Racha, my Rebbe and Rosh Hashiva, very much enjoyed saying this pshat every Purim. He says that on, although we, of course, we curse Haman and we bless Mordechai every Purim, as we should, and the reason why we say after the Megillah, we say Arur Haman, Haman is cursed, Baruch Mordechai, Mordechai is blessed, he points out there's no mitzvah on Pesach to say Arur Paro and Baruch Moshe. There's no mitzvah to curse Paro and bless Moshe. How come on Purim there's a mitzvah to curse Haman and bless Mordechai? So he says, because although Haman was a terrible person, but he did do something good, because it is through him that the Purim story happened, and the result of the Purim story is Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, that the Jews re-accepted the Torah in a very wonderful way. It actually was the prelude to the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple. So there was something good that came out of Haman. And at the same by the same token, although what Mordechai did was good and it was wonderful, he saved us, and his not bowing down to Haman, which is what got Haman angry, that was the correct thing to do. And the Jews, Hashem wanted the Jews to be put into a situation where they were in Sakana, in danger, so that we would do teshuvah, that we would repent, and that was all good. But at the same time, there were tzaddikim, there were righteous people in the days of Mordechai who also suffered. And they weren't supposed to suffer. They weren't supposed to suffer. They didn't need to suffer. They didn't do anything wrong. So there were some righteous people who Mordechai caused them to suffer, and they didn't really deserve to suffer. So there was something that Mordechai did that was a little bit bad. Not that he should have done any differently, but it works against Mordechai. So therefore, says the Nesivus, that therefore we curse Haman, we say Arur Haman, that no matter what good he did, it should be ignored and he should be cursed. And we say Baruch Mordechai, blessed is Mordechai, no matter what bad came out of what Mordechai did, it's all good. We want Mordechai just to be blessed. So he says that a person on Purim should become so excited about the Nes and so happy about the fact that we got closer to Hashem through the Purim story, that a person isn't able to distinguish between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, because what Haman did really ultimately turned out to be good, because we got closer to Hashem through the whole thing, and Mordechai saved our lives. So what they both did was really good. So we lose the sense of discerning between, not out of being drunk to the point we don't know what's going on, but out of our happiness, drinking and being happy about that miracle, we lose our sense of why should we curse Haman? He actually did something good for us in the end. That's how the Rav Yaakov Melissa, the Nesivus, explains the not to know the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. But I want to present to you an idea which is my own idea, which brings together much of these points. Let me pause here for any questions before we go further. So I'm going to now bring in other things which will tie up a lot of what we're talking about. Everything's clear. Either that or people don't... Yes. The Ramah gets his halakha from the Rambam. He's building on the Rambam. The Rambam says fall asleep. The Rambam explains that that means you don't know the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai. There is a Gemara which the Shari Tshuva actually mentioned about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. The Gemara in Shabbos, in the 8th Parak, in the Yerushalmi. And the Gemara over there, I already mentioned it, where Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says, when I drink the 4 cups of wine on Pesach, it gets me so sick I have to hold my head in pain for the next several months. The Gemara then has a story. It follows up with a story. The story is as follows. There was a matronisa, a non-Jewish matron, who accused Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. She said to him, "Your face shines. And if your face shines, you must be one of three things. Either you're a drunkard, or you are a malva beribis, you lend money with interest, or you're a magadol chazerim, you raise pigs for a living. One of those three things." The Karbon Eid over there explains that why would lending money with interest and why would raising pigs make a person's face glow? So he explains that those were very lucrative businesses. Lending with interest was very lucrative, raising pigs was very lucrative. And therefore, a person who does those things would be very wealthy and would not have to worry about his parnasa. Wouldn't have to worry about where his livelihood is going to come from. And that makes a person's face shine. There's a certain serenity that the person has. Doesn't have to worry about parnasa, doesn't have to worry about making money, and there's a certain shine on the face. That's what he explains. So Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says back to her, he says, "You foolish person," he says, "I guarantee you I don't do any of those three things. Two of them are prohibited to me. I can't lend with interest to fellow Jews. I can't raise pigs. The Jews aren't allowed to do that. And drinking wine, I hold my head in pain after I drink the 4 cups of wine for Pesach. So I don't do any of those things. So why does my face shine? Because Chachmas Adam Tayor Panav. The wisdom of a person lights up his face. The Torah that I learn is what makes my face light up." That's his response. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Lamed Aleph on the Beis, where the Beis Din, the court in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, sends a message to Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was the Av Bezdin, who was the head of the Bezdin in Bavel at that time. And they send a message to Mar Ukva concerning a particular case. The case is not relevant to us. What is relevant to us is the title that the court in Israel gives to Mar Ukva in the letter. The first words of the letter are Lidiziv le kibarbisya, like the person who shines like the son of Basya, the son of Basya, the daughter of Taro. Who's the son of Basya, the daughter of Taro? That would be a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu, who the daughter of Taro raised. So to the one, the letter is, we're writing to the one who shines, who glows like the son, like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, we know his face shone, Karan or Panav, his face glowed. So Mar Ukva had a glow on his face similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi over there in Sanhedrin, Laman Aleph on the Beis, says, why did Mar Ukva's face shine? Says Rashi, because Chachmas Adam Toyer Panav, the wisdom of a person lights up his face. Mar Ukva was a Talmud Chacham, and therefore his face shone. Then Rashi says, listen to this. Rashi says, but I saw in a Sefer Agadah, I saw in a Sefer in about this sort of thing, that Mar Ukva was a Baal Tshuva, says Rashi. He's a person who did Tshuva. What was the story? That Mar Ukva was, before he became Mar Ukva, before he became the great sage, Mar Ukva was Nasan Einav B'Isha Achas. He took an interest in a particular woman. And Hela Libotina. And he became sick. The Gemara in another place in Sanhedrin describes that a person can literally become sick from having an interest in a woman and not being able to pursue that interest. And a person can actually, it can be fatal. And here Mar Ukva became very sick from this interest in this woman. And she was an Eishes Ish, she was a married woman. So Mar Ukva could not follow up on his interest. So the Gemara says that after a little while, this woman needed money. She was very poor. And Mar Ukva was a wealthy man. And she needed to go to Mar Ukva to borrow money. So she came to his house. And because of her intense distress, her intense poverty, she was willing to commit adultery with Mar Ukva in order that he should lend her money. So Mar Ukva had a chance. He had the chance. And Mar Ukva fought his Yetzer Hara. He fought his evil inclination and defeated it and sent her away, l'shalom, in peace. He didn't do anything to her. And the Rashi then says, and then when Mar Ukva went out to the Shuk, after that incident, when he left his house and went out to the market, there was a ner daluk me'al rosho. There was a candle above his head. He glowed, he shone, because he was able to overcome his yetzer hara. He was able to overcome his evil inclination. An incredible story. You see the schar, the reward, for a person standing up to their yetzer hara. It is striking that when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that this matronisa, this matron, accuses Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai of one of three things, she says to him, your faith shines either because you lend with interest, you raise pigs, both of which are because that way you don't have any, you have no fear of parnasa, your livelihood is taken care of, or you're a drunkard, you drink a lot. And he says back to her, they're not true, rather my face shines because of the Torah that I learned. And here we also see that Mar Ukva's face shone because of his battle with his Yetzer Hara, with his evil inclination, and because he overcame the battle. You see that the physical feature, the physical appearance of someone who drinks a lot, not necessarily for a good reason, but who drinks a lot, is similar to a person who faith shines because he learned Torah or because he overcame his Yetzer Hara. It's a fascinating thing. She thought he's a drunkard, said, no, it's because I learned Torah, that's why my face shines. Apparently, one's physical features can be similar, which is a fascinating thing. Why should that be? Why should the physical features of someone who learns Torah mimic the person who is a regular drunkard? That one could mistake in one for the other. So it seems to me that what the Gemara is telling us is this. The reason why a person's face shines, in the other two examples, the example of the lending with interest and the raising pigs, is because the person has no worries. They have no problem with parnasa. The livelihood is taken care of. They're okay. When a person is drunk, it's the same thing. A person drinks, and that can be an escape from their worries. That's unfortunately why some people become addicted to alcohol, because they want to escape, and it's a way of nothing to worry about when you're drunk. When a person learns Torah, one would think the milchamta shel Torah, the battle of learning, we all know how hard it is to learn, how hard it is to get ourselves to come to the Beis Medrash, to sit down in the Beis Medrash, to open up the Gemara, to try to break our teeth over the words, to try to make sure that for the time that we're in the Beis Medrash, that we're actually using our time constructively, and we're not just schmoozing, and we're actually focused on what we're trying to do. We know how hard that is. Every single one of us, anybody who learns, doesn't matter whether you're at a beginner's level, or whether you've been learning for many, many, many years, everybody struggles at some point or other, at some level or other, with getting ourselves to learn properly. It's a lifelong struggle. One would think that someone who emerges from that battle and has acquired a certain level of scholarship, they would come out battle scarred. They would come out looking ragged, looking like they just were dragged through the mud. Oh, this incredible battle. Or someone who has a major battle with his Yetzer Hara, who's faced with a terrible, terrible, terrible desire and can't seem to overcome it and fights and fights and fights and fights and they are able to finally overcome that desire. One would think they would emerge from that looking ragged, looking like they were just dragged through the mud. But in fact, the opposite is true. When a person acquires Torah, a person fights that melchamta shel Torah, that battle of Torah, and acquires Torah, And when a person fights with the Yetzer Hara and is able to do teshuva, is able to emerge and be able to defeat his Yetzer Hara, you don't come out looking ragged. You come out glowing. You come out with a sense of serenity, a sense of there's nothing to worry about, a sense of calm. There's a certain just well-being that permeates a person who has just acquired Torah or has just defeated his Yetzer Hara. It seems to me that what Chazal is trying to tell us is the following. Chayav Adam Mepsume Bepurya. A person is obligated, it's not really obligated, it means it's encouraged. The person is encouraged to drink on Purim, even to get drunk on Purim. So they don't know the difference between cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. Let's think about that. Once a person gets to a point that they don't know the difference anymore, then they shouldn't drink anymore. One should stop drinking because they've reached that point already, and it's no longer a mitzvah. It's no longer, you know, a person is no longer encouraged to drink. So let's think about it. I'm at the Purim Suda. Now, anybody who's ever seen me at a Purim Suda, those who attend my Purim Suda, know that I don't, that alcohol gets to my head very, very quickly. It does not take much for me to get to this place in the Gemara. So, you take a drink. Now you want to take another drink. Should you or shouldn't you? What are you going to say to yourself? Arur Haman, Baruch Mordechai. I can still talk. But another drink. Arur Haman, Baruch Mordechai. Another drink. Arur Haman, Baruch Mordechai. Another drink. What is the person going to be thinking about as they're drinking? They're not going to be thinking about, can I stand in front of a king? They're not going to be thinking about Lot and his daughters. A person is going to be thinking about the Purim story as they're drinking, because that's the gauge as to whether or not a person should keep drinking. That means the way that we get drunk, if we get drunk, is focused on the Purim story. Is focused on the miracle of Purim. Is focused on the kimu v'kiblu, on the fact that Purim was a time that we reaccepted the Torah and that we did a tshuva, that we repented from our sins. Because that's what the Purim story is all about. That the Jews were acquired Torah, chachmas adam tayar panav, the wisdom of a person lights up his face, and the Jews did teshuva, they repented. And that also brings to lighting up of the face. It seems to me Chazal wanted that the people should drink, which also lights up a person's face, but focused on the Torah and on the tshuva. Even though we're not going to get to the point of where Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai's face glowed because of the Torah that he acquired, or Ma'ukva's face glowed because of his battle with the Yetzer Hara. We're not on that madrega, but we are mimicking that type of glow of the face. We're doing it through the wine, but we're meant to be focused on Torah and on tshuva as we're getting there. And that is a tribute to the Purim story, because that's what happened in the Purim story, and that brings us to a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it brings us to an understanding of Purim itself. Practically speaking, what should a person do, as all the Mefarshim say? If a person is going to drink and is not going to behave properly, they should not drink. If a person is going to drink and do it properly, which is going to be thinking about Torah, thinking about tshuva, thinking about the Purim story as they're becoming drunk, singing and dancing, where it's going to be a Kiddush Hashem, where it will sanctify God's name, then if a person is not going to get sick, it is appropriate to drink on Purim. As the Gemara says, Chayav Adam Mepsume Bepurim. That's an appropriate thing to do. It is well known that the younger a person is, that people who are not yet adults, that the drinking is much harder to do in a way that it is constructive. One has to be careful, first of all, that to be bear in mind that there are laws in this country about underage drinking. Those laws have to be adhered to. I asked Judge Cohen to provide me with the statute in Georgia, and the statute is that it is prohibited to provide a minor with alcohol, except under two. There are two exceptions besides medicinal, but there are two exceptions, and one is a religious, what is it, service, you said? A religious ceremony, and this is not a religious ceremony. Nobody should fool themselves. Drinking at a Sudas Purim is not a religious ceremony. So one is a religious ceremony, and the other is under in the parent's home that the parent is allowed to give their child alcohol in the home under the parent's supervision. That is an exception in under the Georgia statute. So if you meet those, if you meet that exception, then you're not violating a law. But one needs to be careful where there should be no dispensing of alcohol to a minor who is not your child under your own supervision. There's no reason why one should. It is not in keeping with the law in Georgia. It is not in keeping with the halakha either. Even after a person is old enough to be drinking, or if one's own child is drinking, but the younger a person is, as a person is still a child, it is very unlikely that they will drink properly. I was schooled in a yeshiva setting. That's where I learned how to keep Purim. That's how I learned how Purim is done. And it's obvious to all in a yeshiva setting that the younger students are less likely to drink properly. The older students are more likely to drink properly. If one is going to become sick, as we said, one should not. But if one is going to drink properly, then it is a good thing. It is what the Gemara says. And it should be done in a way that will bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and make a Kiddush Hashem and will sanctify God's name. Ultimately, whether you drink or whether you don't drink, Echad Amar v'Echad Amamitz, whether you do a lot or a little, the goal of Purim is to acquire these two things, Torah and Teshuvah. That's the goal. And that has to be the focus. No matter what you're doing in your Purim Seuda, whether you're drinking, whether you're enjoying watching others drink, whether you're dancing, or whether you're enjoying watching others dance, but the focus for everybody should be Torah and Teshuvah. We should all be zeichet to a fearless and Purim.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.